Welcome back to the MLL podcast. We're going into week 8, and you know, some stuff happened. We're definitely going to go through it. We're going to recap the games. We're going to go over the All-Star roster eventually, and we're going to preview next weekend. And we will have an exclusive interview with now all-time leading point scorer, Paul Rabil of the New York Lizards and Team USA, coming up. But first, I must introduce my co-host, IL MLL writer, Chris Rosenthal. Chris, what is good?
Kyle, how are you doing today? Let's start with that. How are you today, Kyle?
This is a long day, my man. This was a rough day. This was a rough day, but not as rough as Ohio's day was last Thursday when they got stomped by Denver in Denver, 17-6. Ohio, what is happening with you? What is going on? Chris, do you have any thoughts on this game?
Yeah, so, you know, we do know that Ohio is going through kind of a little snake bit patch right now. You know, Kyle Harrison is out, injured. Tom Shriver is out and injured. That being said, still a lot of questions because we're not used to, in previous seasons, a team like Ohio even missing one or two players, which they have done in the past, only putting up 6 goals in an entire game. And not just that, it seemed like there were a lot of situations here where Denver was scoring right in Kyle Brunlor's face. That's what stuck out most to me about this game. It looked like about six or seven goals before they put one that wasn't on the crease. Did you notice a similar sort of thing? Like that's asking a lot, even for Kyle Brunlor. I think we talked about him last week making all these ridiculous saves one-on-one. But even still, that's asking way too much.
Yeah, I mean, he was getting scored on because he couldn't even get into position to see where the ball was. You know, like, it's right. Easy to score on a goalie if the goalie's on the other side of the pipe and the pass moves faster than he can. And that's exactly what happened to him. You also saw a lot of Denver players with unassisted goals straight up running past Ohio Machine defenders. No slide, no hedge, no nothing, no protection. It was a nightmare performance for pretty much everybody in a Machine uniform.
Yeah, it was kind of like what we anticipated. This team kind of going through this murderer's row of their schedule. Like, you know, they're going out to Denver, playing on Thursday, just got off of a bad game, got another game waiting in the wings. It's asking a lot of them. And, you know, they kind of gave us what we expected. But, I mean, even still, 6 goals seems like not much at all.
I mean, they had 2 goals in the first half.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what are we doing? I there's no like one thing I can point to either that's like, this is what's bad. Everything is bad. Everything is bad. And this is just the first game that they played. Their second showing, which we'll get to at the end here of last weekend's recap, because they had a doubleheader, was a better showing.
Yeah.
But the same result. Let's move on to our next game. It's our second ass-kicking of Thursday. Dallas 22, Boston 11. The Dallas offense was, at times, unstoppable. And I had one thought running through my mind as I watch it. I know Boston's in last place, but it just looks so easy. And that thought is, are the Rattlers the title favorites as of right now?
I mean, you know, I guess apologies to Denver, who seems to be, the Outlaws seem to be coming on very strong now that they're fully assembled. But Dallas has been very consistent, I would say a little bit longer than the Outlaws in their final form, like we're seeing right now. I would give them, man, and you know, I guess no disrespect to Charlotte, but I would say, I mean, Dallas has some weapons that you don't necessarily have answers for. And when they're, like you said, Boston has been, kind of hanging out in the basement for a while now. But if you have a Dallas team that's producing and it's not just coming from one person, you know, when you're getting like midfield production like they got in this game, that's a very difficult thing to take care of. Like, I don't think Jordan Wolfe even scored. Yeah, Jordan Wolfe didn't score a point until the third quarter. They already scored 10 goals at that point. You know, if you're getting 10 goals before Wolfe even gets on the board, it's going to be a bad day for you.
It seemed like most of them were off breaks or broken plays as well. I think the Rattlers are the best in the league at capitalizing on those situations and scoring, not necessarily in half field sets, but in sets where half their guys are still on the other side of the field. They're just outrunning dudes and playing the box better than a lot of teams, which just means that they're more organized than a lot of teams. And I think if you're going to point to one thing wrong with Boston, they're not very organized. They're trying out lineups still. They're, you know, they had success last week. They got their second win against Florida by one goal. It was very tight, but they managed to put a run together that secured the game. I think when they play teams that are more organized than them, it's pretty easy to lose. Like, they, right, they just don't have a answer for someone to take the game by the scruff of the neck, you know, throw it in the car and drive it back to school. They just don't have that guy. The closest thing is probably like Will Sands or Max Seabold, and, you know, just we're not there yet. We're not there yet. They're getting better. I'll say that about the Canons. Like, if you watch the Canons in week one, week two, week three, that team, I don't know how that team beats a lower tier D1 team. And now, you know, they're at least competing for portions of the game. They led 2-0 in the first quarter before the Rattlers scored four straight goals and never right, looked back. But, you know, the fact that they can do that at least shows that they can score. Let's move on to our next game, Florida 20, New York 18. This is another bad loss for the Lizards for me. It's a much-needed win for Florida. After they, again, we mentioned this prior, they lost to Boston last week. Definitely needed this to kind of get their confidence back. And, you know, putting up 20 on New York, pretty good way to start.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they have, I think we've probably touched on this a little bit before, they have names, and you kind of count on these names to produce. You know, and when Dylan Minnoy does what we expect him to do, and then Kieran McArdle does the same, if they get production from, you know, that third person, who in this case seemed to be largely Jules Henenberg taking up that role, they kind of ran Ryan Drenner out going against shorty matchups most of the time. But Jules Henenberg, it looked like to me his best game, most comfortable game in the league so far. I mean, that attack was just lethal. New York didn't have any sort of answer for that. You saw poor Drew Adams just getting pelted. He looked like you remember the end of training day, or like Sonny from The Godfather, just getting pelted. I felt bad for Drew Adams. And you can tell he's just like, guys, somebody help me out here a little bit. Yeah, just taking shot after shot.
They definitely needed to put in Cargaterra earlier than they did. I will say that. But that's, you know, they've always done that. They've always kind of opened Drew up to that kind of pressure. And, you know, you can't take it sometimes. I think it's interesting you bring up Henningberg. I thought this game was his best game because it utilized him in the best way, which is free him up to a side and let him move. Mm-hmm. Because he's so good off ball that he gets underneath defenders on the weak side and they just lose him. He's so sneaky, so good at getting away from the ball side and then just reappearing near the goal mouth and scoring. I just thought he was spectacular. Obviously, in this game, Paul Rabil becomes the all-time leading point scorer in MLL history, passing John Grant Jr. We have an interview with Paul Rabil coming up. What are your thoughts on that milestone before we move on? What do you think about him being the all-time scorer?
I think it really, the first thing comes to mind is just a testament to putting in the work constantly. You know, I mean, especially he's been around so long in this league, there have been different versions of it. You know, they've had lean years and greater years, both his teams and the league itself. You know, it's probably tougher to come to work some days than others. It's really, you have to be your own kind of machine if you're going to stay involved in it this long. And, you know, that's saying nothing about his talent or anything like that, like just the dedication you have to put forth to continue at that level, especially from a midfielder. You know, I mean, you're going you know, if Paul's like, say, 26, he's going against, you know, some long stick who just got out of school and wants to make a name against him, you know? So it's just really putting in the work every single weekend that that sticks out to me. It's just is really sort of the way I'm going to remember his play.
Absolutely. Let's move on. Charlotte 19, Atlanta 13. Atlanta just kept making mistakes, and it cost them the game. Just flat out. I think they just made a ton of mistakes in the second half. It looked like they were coming back. Rice was getting it back into his flow. And I don't know. They do dumb things sometimes. You know, I don't know how else to describe it.
Yeah, yeah. I feel the same way about Atlanta. They are really, really good sometimes.
Yeah.
And that just doesn't work. Like, that's the difference between like the top half of the league and the bottom half is how often are you really good? Because, I mean, every team has some good players, but you just have to consistently churn out smart plays. And if you're going to do some dumb stuff, you got to spread it out a little bit. You know, everybody's going to do some dumb things, but you got to kind of pepper it here and there. And they just have like quarters where it's just bad play, bad play.
Yeah, they let up 6 straight goals to Charlotte, and then another one to start the third quarter. So 7 unanswered goals. You let up 7 unanswered goals in any lacrosse game, you can't expect to win. Right. You can still win, but you can't. It's so much harder because it takes not only a toll on your defense, you know, mentally, but it takes a toll on your offense being like, can we get the ball? Like, what's going on? Why can't we score? You know, and I think that Atlanta has so many guys that can score, and they score pretty goals. And Charlotte can also score pretty goals, but Charlotte is a, let's be real here, and this is Charlotte's identity. They're a, you know, lunch pail, punch you in the face for talking bad about their girl kind of team.
Sure, sure.
And I think they showed that here. You know, holding on to win, scoring goals to clear it out, and getting long and extended possessions, even though there's a 60-second shot clock, especially in the fourth quarter, to ride it out and not let Atlanta get any chances with the ball, I think, you know, separates them. And that's why the Hounds are in first place.
Yeah, and they don't seem to be going anywhere. You know, I mean, granted, they have stumbled a little bit twice against the Outlaws, but other than that, I mean, they seem legit. Is it fair to say after 8 games, Charlotte is legit?
Yeah, Charlotte's legit. It's hard to get last season and the season before out of our heads because it's kind of the same base of players, give or take a few guys. But I think that the emergence of Rambo as a legit star has made them, you know, has brought them to another level. And the fact that they do share the ball much better than they have. You know, it's a very unselfish way that they play. Guys like Joe McCallion, you know, coming in there, doing a job, putting in a shift. You know, Ryan Brown, as usual, making, you know, ridiculous goals look easy. I think that you can see how they've gotten to where they've gotten, and I think they deserve it. I don't think that it was shock wins. I just think that they were smart about constructing their roster and executing, and that's the bottom line.
Absolutely.
Let's move on to our final game in the recap. Chesapeake 15, Ohio 12, over 2.5 hour long weather delay at halftime sort of looked to favor Ohio because they were up by 1 and Ohio did start well, but Chesapeake just kept coming. They just kept going at them. And, you know, kudos to the Bayhawks for stepping on the neck. Because that's what they did, and they deserve to win.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Chesapeake is another one of these teams that is right up there, right at the top. And that's one of the reasons, you know, just being able to finish and being able to – I think they're making very good use of the players they have on the field, like, at any given time. You know, it doesn't have to be – a Miles Jones team. Like, he is able to step back right now. And I think if you're not living or dying by Miles Jones, it really, nothing against Miles Jones. I could say that about any human who plays lacrosse. If you're not living or dying by that one person and you're still successful, it just has so many more opportunities to defeat your opponent. You know what I mean? And like, I think this was a really good example of Chesapeake doing that. Like, just for a second, let's talk about Ian McKay.
Yeah.
I think perfect fit in this offense. They just pencil this rookie in there. They're putting him like in the slot on man up plays, and he's just delivering. And then they're kicking him out to the arc on man up plays, and he's still delivering. And I mean, they're just really successful with these little adjustments, you know, like Ryan Tucker comes back in and starts playing a big role. And if you have, you know, you got some individual guys who are shining that, you know, maybe another team hadn't expected at the start of the season to do your shining, it makes you very difficult opponent.
Yeah, Tucker hitting that huge two-pointer there on the restart after the delay, yeah. I think was the turning point, absolutely, in this game. And brought Chesapeake back to a level where they were comfortable, even though they were playing in the fortress, Obetz.
Sure.
Let's talk again about the machine. And again, I don't want to keep belaboring the point. What's happening with guys like Marcus Holman? What's happening with – they traded for Davey Emela, and he barely touched the ball. Like, I don't get it. I don't get what their game plan is when I watch them play. And I think that that's the first time I can say that about Ohio, because it's pretty clear what they try to do when they have everybody healthy. And
yeah,
this one, that did not happen here.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. And I'm okay belaboring the point with Ohio, because we're just so used to a certain standard. You know what I mean? Like, I think I'm comfortable saying things about them that I'm not comfortable saying about Boston necessarily, because I feel like maybe we've said it about Boston already, you know, or maybe we said it last year about them or something like that. At a certain point you say, oh, well, am I just kicking these guys at a certain area? But, you know, I mean, Boston, Ohio, if you look at them, it's like, we have legitimate questions, you know, like,
yeah.
So what exactly is happening here? It feels to me like they're still trying to understand what to do with their offense. You mentioned Marcus Holman in particular. The Chesapeake game, he was moving around in a lot of spots that I'm not used to always seeing Marcus Holman.
Yeah.
You know, he's initiating from the top of the arc, kind of bouncing in and out, sometimes in the slot, sometimes not. He's big, you know, their man-up unit. He's usually, you know, in that slot. But that's with Schreiber above him. He just kind of goes, like, no looks, and it's, like, perfect every time. But it sort of seems now like they've got some pieces, but how to make the most of them seems like they're not quite sure yet. Like, Justin Gutterding, you know, hey, all right, we got our guy in. You know, we're happy he fell to us. But now, like, what are we going to do with him? Is he going to drive from X? Is Kana Canizaro going to stay at X? So Marcus Holman not going to play at X anymore? You know what I mean? Like, they have some names, but are all of those names supposed to be where they are? And what are they going to do with them to get more than 12 goals?
I mean, I'll tell you what they did with Justin Gutterding. They just jammed the ball into his stick and told him to go. And just, like, got out of the way. Yeah. And that is not going to work. That's how you get doubled in the MLL. And he got doubled a lot. You got, like, and we're going to get to this. My view on rookies is you're in a situation where you just finished, especially with Gutterding. Let's take him as an example. You just finished playing in the national championship game. You didn't win it. But you're widely regarded as one of the best players in college lacrosse. You're the all-time leading goal scorer in the history of the NCAA.
Mm-hmm.
So you come into the MLL. I'm going to be blunt here. Pardon me. No one cares what you did. Yep. No one. I don't care what you did. As soon as your college career, and I've said this many times, as soon as your college career is over and you're a pro, you're a rookie. You have to prove it. You have to prove it. And, you know, we're going to talk to Paul Rabel, and we have a question about his rookie campaign and his first goal. And I got a pretty good feeling that that's going to come out with a lot of humility, his answer. So that kind of, and listen, it's not Gutterding's fault. I'm not saying he has that mentality, but the rest of the league does. Like, I don't think he thinks he's entitled to anything. I think that the rest of the league is licking their chops going, oh, big college guy, huh? That's cool. We're going to murder you.
Right, exactly.
That's how it goes. And I think that if you can't reconcile that, if you can't deal with that, then you're not going to last in the league. And I think that's how it should be, if I'm honest. Because you should earn your way in to everything, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. You know, especially, you know, you see this league and the name doesn't do anything for you. Your college doesn't even really do anything for you in this league. You know what I mean? You'll get people from anywhere. You know, you'll get people from player pools who show up and make a difference. Like you said, whatever you did before, it really doesn't mean anything. And, you know, I mean, we obviously know he's a talented individual, but we're going to have to see, first of all, what he can do against pro competition. And, you know, that also means like a pro second slide, you know, a pro third guy, you know, like the third best defenseman in the pro game, as opposed to, you know, the third best defenseman, you know, in your college game.
Yeah,
it is night and day, most likely. All the old resume, go ahead and tear it up once you're in the league.
Yeah. Let's get to our standings recap. I know we talked about where each team is, but we're going to update you guys every week kind of where everybody is in the table. Number one is Dallas at 6-2. Number two is Charlotte at 6-2. Number three is Chesapeake at 5-2. Number four is Denver at 4-4. Number five is Atlanta, 3-4. Number six is New York at 3-4. Number seven is Florida at 3-5. Ohio, like we talked about, 2-6 at number eight. And number nine at the bottom is Boston, also at 2-6. So looking at the table, not a lot of difference between Ohio and Boston, right?
No. Yeah, I don't think many of us would have predicted that at the start of the season.
Definitely not. Chris, I have great news.
What's that?
We have a new sponsor.
Nice. I like it.
On the MLL podcast. I'm going to try and make this as quick and painless as possible. The new sponsor is forhims.com. Chris, did you know that 66% of men lose their hair by age 35? The thing is, when you start to notice hair loss, it's too late. It's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace the hair you've lost. Do you want a bald spot to pop up, or you want to do something about it? Why do guys turn to weird situations or do nothing when they can turn to medicine and science? Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm one of the lucky ones. My hair is thick and luxurious like a bearskin rug on a Mediterranean yacht. However, most of my friends from college are not so lucky, and most of them are indeed bald, but don't worry, there is a solution. Forhims.com. Forhims.com is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, sexual wellness, and other things as it pertains to male health. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. No waiting room, no awkward doctor visits. Save hours by going to Forhims.com. Answer a few quick questions, a doctor will review them, and he can prescribe you products shipped directly to your door. And the best part is our listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today while supplies last. This would cost hundreds of dollars if you went to a doctor or a pharmacy. Go to forhims.com/lacrosse. That's forhims.com/lacrosse. That's forhims.com/lacrosse to take advantage of this special offer just for listeners of the MLL podcast. We're here to help you, man. Isn't that great?
That's pretty awesome.
We're just helping people. Another guy who doesn't need that much help with his hair is Paul Rabel. He is our interview this week. Let's hear what he has to say. Welcome back to the MLL podcast, and we are joined by Team USA and New York Lizards midfielder Paul Rabel. Paul, how's it going?
It's going well. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, we're going to go spicy and we're going to go sweet. So we're going to start off a little spicy with the first question. I don't know if you're going to like this one. Are you the greatest of all time? If so, who is your counterpart in another sport? If not, what will it take for you to get there? And who do you consider to be the best lacrosse player of all time?
So, no. I would say that it require me to learn how to play through the legs around the world with my left hand, and certainly also with my right hand, to be able to catch better when I'm on the crease, and to probably win another three or four championships. So who would I say is the best to ever play? I think there's a series of guys. I think that Gary Gate, Casey Powell, John Grant Jr., and Brody Merrill are all in the mix. There are a host of other guys that could be there that didn't get the opportunity to play in MLL for as long as I and they did. So I think kind of thinking that through and also getting to read a lot of your and other guys' articles about it, that would be my vote, I think.
So who do you think is your counterpart right now in another sport that's at a stage that you're at in your career?
So really trying to poster board me here. you know, I don't know that there's necessarily, like, the answer I want to give you is how I think about it. So I think about who I would like to be more like versus who I think I'm actually like. So there's a pretty big difference there, even though it sounds pretty similar. So I'll tell you, I'm 32. LeBron James is 33. He's been in 9 straight finals. I think we could all reel off the stats because we hear them every day for at a time. The same goes overseas with Cristiano Ronaldo. He's just a year older than me. Lionel Messi is a couple of years younger, but I look at age because as a professional athlete, we quickly depart our skill level in to create room for, I think, our sport mental hygiene and our fitness, our ability to play through injury, and in many cases just avoid it. And I think what you see in other sports and with those guys that I mentioned is their ability to play at the highest level year after year for entire seasons at a time. There's some secret sauce and methodology that they have, but what I think that they also do is continue to strive to learn and surround themselves with people who can help them achieve a goal. So, you know, I mentioned that prelude because my guess is that my peers in MLL try to look at those two or three or four that I mentioned as marks for achievement too. So I certainly won't shy away from that. I will wake up year over year and see LeBron continuing to jump out of the gym, and he gets older but faster and stronger. So it's possible for us to do the same.
Absolutely, I hope so. You've scored 547 points in Major League Lacrosse. Now take us back a little bit. Do you remember about the first one? Do you remember it, and what was the scene like?
I do. So I was playing with the Boston Cannons against the New Jersey Pride. I remember we were at, I believe, either a high school stadium or a lower division college stadium in New Jersey. That team's no longer with us, as we all know. But I was drafted to an absolutely stacked Boston Cannons team. I was insanely nervous my first practice. I got in from the week after the Tuorton ceremony on a Friday night, suiting up, didn't know what to expect. I had my legs about me, though, so I felt really fast and quick. But the skill level of these guys, their ability to see the next play, was just so much faster than what I was used to. That said, Coach Day started me and played me throughout the entire game. Back then, Kyle backed me, there were only 3 long poles allowed at once on the field. So that was made for a little bit more of a transition game. And I couldn't, 1 for 9, maybe 1 for 10 or 11, depends on what day it is I'm recounting this, but I scored, I think, in the third or fourth quarter on a lefty shot, which tends to be one of my favorite shots down the alley, but I worked really hard to get it. We ended up winning that game. I think it was like 22-9. We had Pasquet, John Christmas, Sean Morris, Mike Powell. I think, I'm trying to remember who we had at the X, but we also had a great defense, and Kip Turner may or may not have been starting. Kyle, you can back me on this. I'm trying to tap into my athletic memory here. But anyway, one goal back game. I remember it like it was yesterday, and somehow caught on fire thereafter.
According to Point Streak, Kip Turner was in fact the starting goalie.
Okay, Kip was there. Yeah, a year older than me, played at Virginia, and I knew we had. I think we had. I'm trying to think who our backup goalie was, but he was just as talented. I think he played in a few games that season. But Kip was a goalie of the year. Yeah. Yep.
Yes, I think it might have been Mike Levin back then.
Mike Levin, yeah. You're exactly right. Levin was fantastic, and now he's doing amazing things for our sport. Right, he's the CEO of CityLax or MetroLax. I'm not sure which title he takes right now because I know they've been working on a merger for the past year or two. But he's doing some amazing things for urban markets and growing the game in areas that need help. So and want access to our sport.
Yeah, he was with Metro, and I believe now he's with City. Moving on, you've logged some time at Attack the last few seasons. What inspired or caused that switch? And do you think you'll be playing more minutes there as your career advances? And kind of a follow-up to that, how long do you want to play for?
So to answer your first question, I started my career at Attack when I was in middle school. And then my freshman year in high school, I played for a public school. I played Attack. I've never been good at Attack. Still don't think I'm very good at it. I know I scored coming from X last week, but it was a combination of a slip pick by Rob and a miscommunication by their defender. So I got my hands free. But I'll say with regard to Attack, there's this notion that as maybe midfielders lose some athleticism, that they can pick up and surplus of their stick work and shooting ability down at Attack. I'm not sure that's right as this league gets more and more athletic. The reason why I'm playing there right now, and it's off and on, is to try to change up matchups. So that credit, and it started a bit last year with Joe and Ryan Danny putting their heads together, where some teams like Florida last weekend were shutting me off from the box with a short stick. And so if they put me down at Attack, they would line me up with a long pole, making it difficult for the short stick to come down and switch. So we would just like, and we do it with Ohio a bit too. And so we figure out where the matchup tendencies are, kind of dictate how difficult it is for a team to line up with you based on the positioning. And then of course, like what we see at the college level in Connor Kelly in Maryland, if you have a shooter who can stretch the defense, there's a benefit to being at the point of an attack in the event that there's transition or a fast break possession at the X. So we did get one of those this past weekend where I was able to step into a shot. So it's about being opportunistic and finding good matchups, less about my ability to actually play as an attackman.
And how long do you want to play?
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, how long do you want to play, Paul?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, so I want to play for as long as I'm enjoying playing. I know that sounds really cliche, but that's because I think it's true for athletes to play into their 30s in any sport. There's a very select few athletes, gender and sport agnostic, that are able to do it. Because it requires a high level of skill, consistency, fortune with your health, being drafted and even in many cases traded to the right team that has a spot for you. But if you can make it into that veteran role and then become a leader in the organization, you're really playing on the fumes of your energy and passion for the game. So I don't feel like that is diffusing at all. But it's honestly, it's like a year-to-year thing. And I think when I was younger, it was certainly your thing because there's looming prospects of injury and other things that can happen, especially in pro lacrosse where it's substantially a part-time league or part-time leagues. But you look at, you kind of reassess each year, you look at, you know, how you performed in the previous season, you look at your health and then most importantly, you decide like how much you want it, because there's nothing worse and nothing more poisonous in an organization than a player who's just playing, and doesn't have a real passion, doesn't want to be there. That's what makes the best teams, the guys who are most energetic. So I could see myself playing for another handful of years.
And you mentioned, you know, lacrosse being a part-time sort of gig. So I wanted to ask about another one of your gigs. Tell us a little bit about your podcast, Suiting Up Podcast. You know, what made you want to start doing it? And just looking back, what guest kind of stands out being more memorable and surprising?
Yeah. Thanks for asking and that plug. I think, as you guys can tell, as I've been long-winded in these first few questions, you know, audio, especially long form, in podcast form, tends to fit me well in that particular medium. I generally, and even going back to the LeBron James and Cristiano Ronaldo, Lionel Messi comments, like I'm a very curious person, and I feel like I've always been. It's come out in different shapes and sizes, mainly when I was younger in a competitive state and through work ethic. But now, as I've grown more intellectually, I found that one, being at the top of my game in lacrosse has created this opportunity to meet a lot of fascinating and successful people across sports and industry. And then two, through, I think, a lot of the loins of humility and healthy communication that I learned from my mom and dad and older brother and younger sister, that I've been equipped with a skill set of networking and building relationships beyond first contact. So when I launched this podcast about a year ago, a little bit over, my goal was to, through tips really from buddies, to kind of bring a lot of these relationships that I have and conversations that I've had to the public, as they could be a learning vessel for not only me, but for others. And so the first thing is to see if some of my friends and extended friends would be interested in hopping on and having these types of conversations, which are around high performance and skill hacks and psychology and sport and business and ways to handle adversity and ways to handle success. If one, they'd be interested in doing it. And then two, if our thesis was right, that people would be interested in listening. And both have checked out, fortunately. My favorite guests, I would say, have been Ryan Holiday, have been Adam Grant, Steve Nash, Scott Galloway. Bill Belichick, an early one, was awesome. Same with Matt Hasselbeck. He was early. Jeremy Lin was a lot of fun. He lives right down the street here in Brooklyn. And then I actually have, you guys will appreciate this, I have this one coming up next week, but Dan Patrick, who's kind of like the legend in sports casting, and talking about his road through traditional media and now building a sports casting bachelor's program through Full Swing University for new media and new sportscasters looking to tap in, leveraging new technology.
Awesome. And now that you've been at it for a while, now that you're kind of a vet to the podcast, what advice do you think you could give to people kind of hustling, trying to make it on their own podcast game?
So I would say to pay attention to the feedback loop that is innate to this medium. And the same goes to Instagram. If you're trying to create a kind of like an influencer platform for yourself, and YouTube as well. So listen to it for two reasons. One, you'll be able to improve personally through communicative, maybe poor communicative tendencies that you have, ways that you are presenting questions, ways that you perhaps listen better, and that translates off this medium into personal and professional life. So that's been the most valuable piece for me. And then the second is, through creation and consistency of creation, You'll build a loyal audience if your product is good and the market likes it. And it's like one of those kind of straightforward, certainly not like powerful wisdom, but what they say in venture capital or you know, if you're a founder in the startup world, is your business, or in this case, your podcast is only worth what the investors think it's worth, or in this case, is only as valuable as your listeners. So make sure that you're paying attention to them, and the analytics and the tools that you'll have at your disposal will tell you maybe where the show is at its peak versus when people taper off, and solicit that feedback actively and try to book guests that people want to listen to. And so that would be my advice. There's no blueprint to success. And I suppose that there's no real definition for success either. If you are subscribing primarily to option one, then just by doing this and learning from it time and time again, and you've reached success. If you want to build a massive audience and make a ton of money off of it, well, you better be really data analytic oriented.
Yeah. See, Chris, like, you know, getting Paul on the podcast was the right move. He just said,
that's right.
You know,
maybe. I don't know what your audience says, but
yeah, we'll see. Considering the audience I had during the in the crease time, all NCAA, I'm happy to be with the MLL people now. So you're heading to Netanya this summer to seek your, I believe, second gold medal for Team USA. A lot of athletes in other sports that aren't, you know, fully professionally funded, that is the apex, is a world championship, putting your nation's colors on and winning the gold. How do you see the World Games as it pertains to your career and your kind of legacy?
I would agree. I think it's the peak moment for our sport. Every 4 years, we treat it, and I think the industry for the most part sees it as our World Cup. You know, if we were governed by FIFA, and unfortunately we play at the same time every 4 years, I think the powers that be need to shift the FIL World Championship to a non-FIFA World Cup year. That'll give us a fighting chance to maybe secure some type of media rights deal that potentially generates revenue and founding sponsors to be a part of the event. But it's no easy feat to battle with the biggest event in sports that comes once every 4 years, that amasses over a billion viewers over the course of a month. So anyway, getting a little bit of my frustration out on that side from as I try to shift over from podcast and analytics to the player. This is my third World Games, so I've been fortunate to now play in England, play once in the States, and now over in Israel. So there's no better experience as a lacrosse player, having played at every level, than getting the opportunity to play for Team USA. You get a mixture of the best players in the world. You get to feel what it's like to represent your country, which across sports is consistent and of that equalizing moment, no matter what sport you are, niche or mainstream. And then I've got an opportunity to play for some of the best coaches that our game has to offer. And then play against one of the best teams, if not in many cases, the last time, the best team at the time in Canada, and then even the Iroquois in Australia. You know, I think people forget that lacrosse is Canada's national sport. It's the Native American game, but Eastern Canadians were the first to adopt it. And they were the first to win Olympic gold in 1904, 1908, when our sport was an Olympic sport. And so Canada, U.S. has a ton of history. I think that Canada, for the most part, represents the more kind of NLL box game. But what we've seen, primarily starting with Tavares and the Gates, really trying to pump field lacrosse into north of the border, and then Brody Merrill and Jeff Snyder launching East and West academies and high school curriculums that integrate field lacrosse. We've really seen that spike in their style of play on the field change from where previously they were just bringing kind of this indoor methodology to the outdoor game. So you have that rivalry is what I'm getting at. And it's one that we're excited to go back at, as they got the best of us in 2014. We got the best of them in 2010. But it's a moment beyond that where, you know, you spend 4 weeks with a group that cares a lot about this game and a lot about the legacy that they'll leave behind, not only for Team USA, but the rest of the world, in this game. And hopefully as 2022 approaches, we go from 58 countries to 70 plus. We think that with Jim Scher, who's the CEO of the FIL, he was formerly with the USOC, that he can drive recognition once again from the IOC to be a sanctioned sport in the Olympics and potentially play as a participation sport in 2024 and hopefully for sure in 2028 as the games come back to LA. But we're, I think we're close to embarking on a time where we see lacrosse growing at the international level, being a part of the Olympics, and then getting to your point earlier, that funding, which comes through the IOC, through the national governing bodies across the world, that will really, I think, allow our sport to grow further internationally.
I shifted a little bit here for you. What stick are you currently using, and who does your stringing?
So I'm using a Rabel 2 this past weekend. So I was a stick that I helped build with Warrior and their team over there. Since I've been probably 25 or 26 is Riley Martin. I found him when he was in high school. I actually ran time all the way back to Instagram. I ran a social media contest where I started noticing all of these amazing stringers. And it was at this stage of my life where I started to get a little bit of humility ounce by ounce and realize that, like, hey, I know how to string a stick, but there are better stringers out there. Why not leverage that and put your ego aside? So I ran a contest, and for like, I think it was the three winners of the contest, I would send them two heads, one for them to keep and one for them to string for me and send back. And one of the winners was Riley, and the stick that he sent back was just unbelievable. I've been sending him heads ever since to string, and so he's been a part of this journey.
Yeah, I mean, the follow up to that is, where's the Warpel, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. So we've been working on now with Zach Currier, who's employed by Warrior, to use his, his stringing expertise, knowing now a bit about that through Joel Tinney, who's with the Lizards and played with him all the way through high school at Culver Academy. So I thought it was a terrific hire by Warrior. So my pocket, and I've spent a lot of time and been really transparent about it on my YouTube channel, is pretty intricate. And so, you know, Riley's been good at trying to figure out how I originally had this high scoop and very little whip. So it's a lot like to use a reference in another sport, but an Ovechkin curve, where it's very different. And so I think what the warp technology is doing for our sport is creating a pocket that allows the equipment to be scalable for the masses. And I think there is a lot of back and forth conversation between the stringing community and the 3D knitting technology that Warrior has. And I think I definitely understand it, but where Warrior's coming from is from the manufacturer's perspective of trying to get more sticks in hands and looking at real data that shows that a lot of kids drop out of lacrosse because it's too technologically advanced. They either don't have the coaching or the stick they have isn't performing. I see it almost every time I do a Rabel Tour event. There's a handful of kids that don't stand a chance because their pocket's too deep or they don't have a pocket at all. So what they're trying to do is to create a level of consistency through scalable product innovation that gets a pocket into a stick, and you you can trust it being on shelf that it's going to perform a certain way, and you're not leaving it up to potentially human error to disrupt the playing experience for a young kid. And so for me, a number of things. One, I'm super neurotic in most things that I do. So I've been using my mesh stick for my entire life. So I go back and forth with Warrior, especially when it comes to performance, on certain like intangibles to where I may not have the hands. I certainly actually can say this. I don't have the hands of a John Grant Jr. or Zach Currier. So I rely on, this certain pocket that I've used for years to allow me to switch hands or swim move the way that I did. And we're trying to create a pocket that not only can replicate how unique that is, but to something that I can put enough hours with and against the wall to feel comfortable to play when the game's on the line. And again, kind of probably goes back more towards my psychosis and level of comfortability with the norm. So I'm trying to work on that personally, but I will say that that by and large, the strategy for Warrior and really kind of trying to say this impartially, knowing that I'm an endorsed athlete of theirs, is the right one. Even going after our conversation with the Olympics, and if our sport was to see real growth internationally, is like we need to rely on manufacturing that gets sticks in hands that are playable all the time in all conditions.
Yeah, and feel free, you know, if your squad is doing the best work, absolutely go ahead and say that. Got a non-sports question for you entirely. What's the last great movie you saw, and what is the worst movie you have seen recently?
Tough question. I haven't watched many movies recently. I've been watching original scripted programming, so maybe I can take it there if you'll allow me.
Sure, by all means.
Okay, cool. So I would say the best and latest that I've watched, and I'm waiting for the next season, is Game of Thrones. I'm watching Billions on Showtime, but I stepped aside from season 3 to watch The Fourth Estate on Showtime, which is amazing. And it's a docuseries following the New York Times, Washington Post, and Washington Bureau post the inauguration of Donald Trump. And so I think if you guys haven't watched it, you'd really appreciate it as journalists yourself and really relying on like pure ethics in journalism is seeing the day-to-day, the rise of and challenges of the Times and the Post, because their subscriptions and revenues are actually up despite what we hear in the media. And because of new technology, the demand that they're against to create the same level of quality content that they once did 10 years ago that they could get out and spend 24 to 48 hours on into the presses immediately to hyperlink through a tweet. So they're like, I mean, we talked about founders earlier. They themselves are like founders of a startup. They're spending 16, 17 hour days telling stories to Americans and people everywhere really about what's happening in our country and what's at stake with our foreign affairs. So it's a fascinating show, four parts. So I just finished it last night. The worst thing that I've seen, I can't tell you, honestly, I don't watch enough. And so I'm really selective. So it feels like a cop out, but I just haven't seen anything that's bad that's worth reporting on.
As someone that highlighted all of the bad things that I watched during the NCAA season, I can tell you that you're in the right mindset there. That's the right move.
The season was great, though. If that's what, you know, and that's what you weren't referencing, but I did watch that and really enjoy. I thought it was incredible content. So kudos to you guys and STX for putting that together. And I know Kyle was on the ones and twos giving a narration, but that was really awesome. I'd love to see more of that in our sport. It's a big project though to handle. So being able to get that stuff out regularly requires additional capital infusion into our sport and probably more hands on deck.
Yeah, no, that was great. I was just referring to NCAA season in general and trying to unplug my brain and watch really awful stuff. And it's not the right move. Just so you know, don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'll ask you one of my final questions. These are easy. Who is your favorite team sports athlete, and who is your favorite individual sports athlete of all time?
Ooh, of all time.
Yeah.
My favorite team sport athlete of all time. I bet you I'm going to give you an answer and probably regret it when I call back and say, hey guys, let's do this again. But I would say that I'm leaning towards Steve Nash. I've got a chance to build a relationship with him. I idolized him for his playmaking skills and his longevity and career for a long time. I grew up playing basketball, and his affinity towards soccer too. Except he's really good, and I had trouble kicking the ball. So I would say Steve Nash on the team sports side to not keep you guys waiting. And then on the individual sports side, I would have to say trying to decide between honestly, the dilemma that I'm up against is if Tony Hawk is overly stated. But I reference Tony Hawk all the time and what he was able to do for action sports, most specifically skateboarding. But I would say Tony Hawk, and if I were to talk about a personal relationship and one that we're all proud of as Americans and his achievement in the Olympics, and he's a Baltimore bred athlete, is Michael Phelps.
Okay.
Yeah,
good choice.
Yeah, I never skated, but I swam, and I was a pretty good swimmer. But I could never get in the pool with Mike. I don't think anyone can actually. So,
all right. So here's the last one. We're going to wrap it up with this one. So, in honor of your record-breaking accomplishment, we don't have a trophy or anything for you. We have something better, if you ask me. We're going to give you two spots on our burgeoning summer MLL playlist. So what we need from you is we need two recommendations, songs, just, you know, favorite songs, best songs, whatever you want to do with it. We're going to add it on a playlist we're putting together with all of our guests. So give us two songs that we must have on the summer playlist.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go with one that's been popping in our locker room. That's Drake. Look Alive, and then one that I listened to and give a shout out to my days and my early concert days. I was talking about this earlier with a buddy, but Dave Matthews Band, Don't Drink the Water.
Very nice.
It's going to be an eclectic mix now. We're going towards different areas, but
yeah.
No, that's great.
Well, that's the point, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not a playlist unless it's weird. So
yeah.
Now we're getting to that space, and we're pretty happy with it. And we're happy that you were able to join us today. Thank you so much for giving much of your record-breaking time to us. And good luck this week.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. This interview was a lot of fun, and it will certainly serve as this sentimental trophy for setting this points record.
Glad to hear.
Thanks. Okay, so that was pretty cool.
That was very cool. Thanks to Paul. Congratulations on that record once again.
Yeah, what I didn't know going into the interview is that you haven't actually talked to Paul all that much, right?
Yeah, no, literally never. Literally never. Next time I see you, Paul, I will be sure to say hello and give you a high five.
Yeah, I can't believe that. I honestly can't. Like, I don't want to make a big deal out of it, but like the fact that you've been doing MLL for almost as long as I have and you haven't talked to Rabel is pretty interesting. I actually did his first interview when he was a rookie, and I went to the Cannon's office, and I had to sit in the PR director's chair while she was sitting there watching me, and they had to get all the questions approved, and I had to just do it right there. And that's the only way I could talk to him. And now he's on a podcast and we're just breaking it down. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, just kicking it.
Yeah. Okay, so here's where it gets not weird. We're already weird enough, but I think we're just going to get a little heated because the All-Star roster for the MLL team against Team USA came out today. Lacrosse Twitter set itself on fire, walked into the sun. It was pretty great.
Yep.
What I want to know are your first three thoughts when you read through the roster.
Okay, so my first thought, which is I think kind of like the a resident sore thumb of the whole thing when I looked at the roster, is like, wow, they have they got some rookies, which is not in and of itself a, you know, a bad thing or anything like that. They have some super rookies. I think that's a reasonable thing to call them. And not just that, but they have Ben Reeves, which was surprising to me because he has never played professional lacrosse as of this recording, which one would probably think is a prerequisite for being on an MLL All-Star roster.
One would think.
Yeah, so that was my first thought. That was like, oh, okay. Record skipped on that one. My second thought was Kevin Rice is atop the roster here, probably just because he plays attack, and that's kind of how it was lined up there. But I feel like Kevin Rice is going to approach this like he's going to destroy everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Just let him out the cage and watch him do damage. Flamethrower against anybody in front of him. And you remember this? People may not remember this. It was a huge sort of deal during the whole tryout process. We were like, hey, where is Kevin Rice? He's literally not even at tryouts. Whoever put the teams together were just like, nah, nope. Like, there's no way you can make it, even if you try out. Which you would think, you know, you'd think give him a shot, at least. I mean, he's a monster, but people make the decision they make. So I was looking forward to angry Kevin Rice just doing work. I guess, you know what, those are probably the two thoughts that have dominated most of my thinking on this. Super rookie, and Kevin Rice gonna do some damage. What were your immediate impression?
Yeah, there's eight attackmen on here. It's funny that you listed Will Sands as attack / midfield guys. That's hilarious. But there's eight attackmen on here. That's actually, no, there's nine. What are you doing? I just that doesn't make any sense. I know we're trying to put together a roster to take on Team USA, and from what I understand, the Team USA alternates will also be playing in this game. So Miles Jones will be playing for Team USA from everything that I've heard.
Okay.
The other thing that I'm looking at here is guys that I get you want to put rookies on here. I get it. I know that you think it's going to move the needle, but I'm willing to take a bet. And that bet is that this game will not outdraw the last time this game happened 4 years ago when Team USA played MLL. I think there's no way that's happening. And I think part of that is because the Cannons haven't even played at Harvard all season. And part of it is because the marketing is only LSN and Twitter, from what I can see. So I don't think there's a lot of external push to put this game forward. I'm sure US Lacrosse is about to launch into their campaign to push this game because it's their team as well. You know, it's Team USA. But putting these guys on there, I don't know if rookies, just because they finished a season, are, you know, there's no Pied Piper on here leading 50 fans into the stadium. I don't see it. I mean, Austin Sims is on here and he's played in two games and hasn't played since May. Like, I don't know. Justin Gutterding just played two games. And his second game was better than his first game because his first game was not great. But you've got a lot of guys that I think maybe people have think they have more juice than they do in terms of moving the needle. And that's my first thought. My second thought is a lot of players in the MLL sign endorsement deals. And a common kicker in those deals is if you get selected, you get X amount of extra money as a bonus for being selected to the MLL All-Star team. Now, that's problematic if you care about the players, because now you're by selecting rookies that don't even have these deals yet, by and large, you're preventing your veteran players who have already proven themselves to you from acquiring more money for their part-time job that you employ them in. You should be pushing more veterans just because of that. Because otherwise the union is just going to happen and then you're really done. But that's kind of a deeper cut than we probably want to get into here. These are great players. I want to say that first and foremost. These are all great players. No one is terrible on this list.
Sure.
You know, I don't. That is not what I'm saying at all. I do believe there are more deserving people. Dylan Malloy not being on this list after dropping 8 points last week and being one of the best attackmen in the world and being able to attend. I talked to him. He's very much able to have been selected here. You can't do that. You cannot do that to your players. You can't do it to your fans. You know, the argument that I saw that took all day to come to me because I was waiting patiently for the people to turn, because there's always someone. Not someone. Always. This someone was Chris Marshall, who was like, This is for the fans. It does, you know, that's why they brought in all these young guys. It doesn't matter. I think Dylan Malloy has some fans. I think people remember Dylan Malloy, one of the best players in the last 10 years of college lacrosse. I think people remember him. You know, apparently Matt Rambo had a wedding. Fine.
Okay.
They can't go. And the other part of this that I'm going to pull the curtain back on is that when players sign their deals, their MLL contract, not with their teams, but with the league, because everyone signs with the league, not the teams. It's a single entity structure. More on that at a later date.
Right.
They are asked if they are selected for the All-Star game, if they can go, or if they have a scheduling conflict. And you know what? Some people already have their lives scheduled out enough that they know, and they say no. And that's fine. They have the right to do that. I don't think that happened in many cases here. And then when you get picked, the league asks you, hey, can you go? Yeah. Kyle Harrison is hurt, and he's on this list. But Kyle Harrison's on there because he's Kyle Harrison.
Sure.
So I'm not mad at any one particular selection except for the ones that you've already pointed out. There's no other – I have no grief with most of these. You know, I get it. This is a good team. This is a lot of firepower.
Right.
But the way that this was done, the people that were left out in the cold from this, I don't know how you're a player in the MLL and you drop – you know, I use Ty Thompson as an example. Drops 25 goals, doesn't even get a sniff from the league for the All-Star team. And you're putting in a guy who hasn't played yet. That's not right. I don't care who you are. I don't care what kind of record you have. If you haven't played, you can't get selected to the All-Star team. That's not fair. I know he's going to play this weekend. I saw that tweet. I know he's playing for Dallas this weekend. So he's going to have at least played one game. But you announced this and he hasn't played yet. And I think that's wildly irresponsible of you to do that. And by you, I'm talking to the league as an entity. I think that's irresponsible. And one last thing I want to touch on. This might be the most challenging game that Team USA plays if Canada doesn't go to Netanya, which recent developments have shown that it's possible, if not probable, that that will happen.
Right.
So I think that knowing how let's say, cahoots is not the right word. Knowing how allied and connected U.S. lacrosse and MLL are now, I would not be surprised in the slightest if that Team USA coaching staff had a little bit of input on who they wanted to play against in this game.
Yeah, yeah, and to kind of touch on that a little bit, the kind of sort of thing that MLL has kind of dealt with over the years regarding its all-star selections is you as a fan, or, you know, us as, you know, people watching it talk about it, we're never quite sure exactly how seriously to interpret these lists.
Yeah.
Other sports kind of have a standard of how they do it, you know, whatever it is, however it's done, it's just how they do it. So at, say, the end of someone's career, they say, Joe Smith is a 5-time All-Star, and this and that and this and that. As of July, Ben Reeves is going to be a 1-time All-Star in Major League Lacrosse. Yeah. You know, so if we're having debates a couple years down the road, he's already got one. Now, if he's there because you figure, oh, you know, he's a big name, he just won 4-time, big NCAA champion, okay, that's fine. But we kind of need to readjust what it means to be an MLL All-Star. Or is this year kind of different, and every few years they decide that being an MLL All-Star is different, and it's not really All-Star, it's being a member of the team that goes against Team USA.
I just think, you know, it makes, like, it mean less, period, full stop. I think, and you got to go look back at all of them.
Yeah, it's like, it's almost like you're adjusting currency rates at this point, you know? It's like, oh, okay, so this is something different, you know? If it is for the fans and you just want, you know, players that you think would make the fans happy, and I don't know what he's up to that weekend, but who doesn't want to see Ty Thompson? Like, he doesn't just score goals. He scores crazy goals.
Yeah.
Any angle. Like, you should pay money to want to see Ty Thompson playing lacrosse.
Yeah.
Dylan Malloy, yeah, same thing. Crazy goals, crazy ability. I mean, we've seen him over the years. Fans seem to enjoy him. I mean, all the stuff from Brown, charismatic interaction with fans. It seems like that's a no-brainer. I would be very curious as to why people like that aren't selected. Like, what would be the justification for it? Like, just give me a reason where you think, oh, you know, Dylan Malloy, yeah, he's not really, he's good, but he's not all-star good.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I would like to hear that explanation.
I don't think there is one. I think we're just adjusting it. I mean, am I crazy because I expect people to earn things? Like, that's the kind of thing that I ask myself when there's not enough furor over this. There's not enough juice. There's juice, but, like, people aren't as fired up as I thought they might be. And I'll tell you one thing. I guarantee you the MLL crafted this, sent it out, and waited for someone to be like, what is this? Like, they expected it. They don't – That's neither here nor there, but I'm sure they were like, here we go. Let's go. I don't know if they were like, oh, we left some guys off. I'm not sure. You know, I don't think that's how it works. I think they thought they did a great job, and then we got this list, and there's plenty of holes to pick apart out of there. There's plenty of nits, but I don't know. I think we just need to move on to something else that's a little more positive, and that is the recommendation of the week. Chris.
Let's do it.
Chris, my man, you are not going to believe me, but I'm going to recommend what is considered by many to be the worst film of 2017. Do you know what that film is?
No.
Geostorm.
I forgot about Geostorm. I forgot it existed.
This is one of those movies that is so bad that it circles back to amazing. Let me just... I'm going to do the first 5 minutes of Geostorm.
All right.
In 2019, weather is bad. Multiple natural disasters ravage almost every nation on Earth. Humankind bands together to create a machine that controls the weather with hot and cold missiles launched into clouds.
What?
Yep. They call the satellite that these are launched from Dutch Boy. But that constantly makes me think of like paint. But they're basing it on the fable of the boy who stuck his finger in a leak and saved a whole town, all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, and I was thinking the paint.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so the creator of Dutch Boy is Gerard Butler, who managed to somehow do a better accent than Jim Sturgis, who plays his brother in the movie. And caveat, I hate Jim Sturgis. He is awful. But he's so awful in Geostorm that I almost liked him at the end. I was real close, and I'm almost done. So because Gerard Butler's character, whose name I do not call because it's Gerard Butler basically playing himself, like he is in all of his roles, he can't give a bureaucrat a win, right? He's got to stand up to him. He's got to smart mouth him. He goes to a hearing at the Capitol. He gets fired by his brother on the steps of the Capitol building because his brother is somehow in charge of Dutch Boy after the hearing in a scene we don't see. Mm-hmm. Cut to 3 years later. Yep, sounds great. Cut to 3 years later. There's a computer virus on Dutch Boy that freezes a town in Afghanistan, superheats Hong Kong, and ejects a crew member into space.
What?
Yeah.
And the
only guy that can fix it is, you guessed it, Gerard Butler. And I will say that the movie gets more convoluted from there, but it also gets more awesome. And I'm not going to spoil it because it's so stupid and ridiculous that you have to see it. The absolute gall of this movie to exist is unprecedented, and the greatest scene in the movie involves a rocket launcher for no reason.
Wow. Okay, so first of all, shout out to Gerard Butler's agent for still getting him work.
No doubt.
Just constantly get that paper. The only thing I remember about Geostorm is when the trailer came out for it, I thought it was the next Sharknado.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Similar style, little more polished. A little less narrative, but a little more polished. I feel you there.
Wow. Okay, so now I have to go watch Geostorm.
Yeah. And if it's bad, I'm sorry, but I just thought it was so bad that it swung back to good. So
I assume it'll be awful. But I will check it out. Real quick, I have a recommendation as well. Very quick and simple. Go to YouTube and type in Yo-Yo Ka Drummer. That is Yo-Yo Ka Drummer. It is an 8-year-old girl who is a drummer and absolutely crushes Led Zeppelin's Good Times, Bad Times. It's amazing to see an 8-year-old playing anything as remotely challenging as Zeppelin drums. And worst case scenario, you get to hear Good Times, Bad Times anyway. So check that out. Free on YouTube.
All right. So that will bring us to our weekend preview. Up first, Chesapeake versus Atlanta, 7 p.m. on Saturday. I feel like we talked about it earlier. Atlanta just has to be consistent throughout the game to have a chance here. And, you know, Chesapeake is definitely the favorite.
Yeah, I'd say so. You know, until we see Atlanta play four quarters and Chesapeake the way they've been rolling, I actually have to kind of lean towards the Bayhawks. The Blaze need some consistent midfield scoring threats. You can count on Rice, Gibson finishing inside. They just traded for Sergio Salcedo, a Delta future draft pick, over to Florida to pick him up. He hasn't been playing the past couple games with the launch. Do you think the trade for Salcedo could matter in that midfield, or there just isn't enough room there? It's just more production from the guys they have.
I think maybe their rookies didn't pan out like they thought they would. I think Christian Cuccinello actually played pretty well in the last game. But I think that they're looking to get a diversified playmaker. I mean, Salcedo is basically, you know, a clone of Matt MacCready's. So I don't know why that trade makes any sense, because MacCready's is already on the Blaze. But I think you might see him float a little bit more and play the Danny Ipe role that he has played for the first kind of 4 or 5 games for the Blaze. and he's going to kind of be the first guy out of the box, not necessarily handling the ball, but moving off ball, setting picks, and popping out, getting open for shots. I think Salcido is the kind of player that traditionally has the ball in his stick to make something happen, and I don't know how much he's going to see the ball with all the great attackmen that Atlanta has, like Kevin Rice. All right, next game, New York versus Charlotte, 7 p.m., also on Saturday. I feel like you got to favor Charlotte here. They're playing great after, you know, we mentioned they're basically tied for first place. They had a few slip-ups in the last couple weeks. But I think that all the credit for their success has to go to their defense. And if you have a good defense against New York, you just got to hold it. You got to hold them, keep them in half field sets, keep them in the 6-on-6. Don't let them get any transition and try to get somebody to put the shackles on Rob Pinnell, because that's the guy that everything flows through.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of defense, I think kind of conversely, New York is going to live or die by theirs. You know, I mean, coming off of giving up 20 goals in their last performance, you know, how are they going to approach Charlotte, who has done, a good share of offensive damage in their own right? It could be a difficult day for that close defense. You saw him this past weekend. Dylan Malloy was especially kind of able to take advantage of his matchups, really sort of a physical style. So, I mean, and Matt Rambo can play in a similar way, just dropping that shoulder. And it gave New York a lot of trouble last week, so we'll see if they have something new going into this one.
Yeah, it's a good comp. Malloy and Rambo playing a similar style, both having a lot of success this season. Our next game is Denver versus Florida at 9:30 p.m. also on Saturday. I think Denver plays great at home, and Florida is flying in a ton of guys for this. I do see the Outlaws continuing their surge. Unless Florida can win draws and outpossess them, one thing we haven't talked about yet is Tommy Kelly was dealt to the Lizards for a first-round pick. I mean, it's the second faceoff guy to be dealt for a first-round pick this year. What? Why?
You know what? I mean, you know, it's crazy. I think everyone kind of feels like there's kind of this rush and you need to solidify the faceoff position, you know? I would guess maybe the fear is being terrible at faceoffs could doom your team. Maybe Ohio last year was an exception. You know, they finished with something like 37%, but they still won the championship. But I think people don't want to count on that sort of thing. That being said, I'm not entirely sure yet how much it truly matters that you have a faceoff guy who's going to win 58% as opposed to 53% or 60 as opposed to 55. So, I mean, maybe we'll find out next year when all these first round picks are getting. So I should say this, either the value of the faceoff man in a league like this is somehow kind of flying out of whack, or the value of the first-round draft pick is being reevaluated. Maybe people are thinking they can get somebody they need to contribute later on. But something seems to be shifting in this sort of dynamic.
Yeah, I think everybody's in win-now mode, but I also think that, you know, I think you're totally right about face-offs. I'm not saying they don't matter.
Definitely not.
We're not saying that. We're saying that 60% versus 55 in a league with a shot clock matters way less than people think it does. Does it matter? Does 50% to 60% matter? Yeah. Does it matter as much as 40 to 60, which is kind of where Ohio is, and Ohio didn't make these deals? I think it matters more for them. They're 2-6. You know, I think it's a need-based thing, and I think we've seen teams being like, well, we can't let that team get a faceoff guy, so let's just trade for our guy. It's the classic fantasy football move of picking up a quarterback when the guy you're playing against quarterback is on a bye week. Pick up the best guy. You can't have him now.
Right.
I'm gonna beat you. And I think that's what we're seeing play out throughout the league a little bit. That's not the only thing, but I think that's part of it. Our last game, Dallas versus Ohio on Sunday at 7:30 p.m. listen, the Rattlers are unbeaten at home. Ohio will be without Schreiber, without Harrison, probably a few other guys. Ohio's on notice, and this is a must-win game for them. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, just mathematically speaking, it really – they've gotten to a point, and it's crazy to say this in, you know, middle of June, but yeah, I mean, a lot of games towards the end of the season could end up being inconsequential if they don't kind of sneak up and grab one, like in this particular situation, you know, and kind of turn things around a little bit. I mean, it is wild to imagine that this early, but, you know, it is where we are.
Yeah, I mean, what better chance to get that much-needed win than getting it against the first-place team? That at least puts some confidence back into your squad, being like, listen, we beat the best team in the league. We can do anything. Let's go. We just got to batten down the hatches and go full speed. I don't see it happening, if I'm honest.
No.
Not with the way Dallas played last week and not with the guys that they're rolling out there. Ben Reeves making his debut. I don't know. I think it's tough to go up on the side of Ohio unless you're a Machine fan right now.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. We are in our last segment, the MVP of the week. Chris, take it away.
So I got to say, the MVP of the week, for me personally, is pretty easy one this week. It is the Washington Capitals. I am a D.C. area resident. And if you didn't know, we never, ever win anything. We have not won a major sports championship since 1992. And so it's been a lot of years of a lot of heartbreak. And Capitals beat the Vegas Golden Knights 4-1. Celebrated in Vegas because that's where they won it, which is probably the perfect place to win a championship. And they just haven't stopped celebrating it. And you might have seen some of this stuff online here or there, but the amazing thing I think they're doing is they're coming back to DC and celebrating at like local establishments. They're not doing like the, oh, I got bottle service behind the velvet rope at this club. Like they're going like full Bill Murray and just kind of popping up at the spot where you might be on a Saturday, except they have the Stanley Cup with them.
Yeah.
So it's just constantly people saying, you're not going to believe this, but, you know, Alex Ovechkin just walked in with the Stanley Cup. He got out of a cab and, you know, he's standing around in Georgetown right now. So the whole city is losing their minds and, none of these guys can ever like get arrested again or pay for a meal or anything like that. They are all the kings of DC. So the MVPs, all of them, the Washington Capitals.
Yeah. Shout to all the real fans. Fake fans. I was monitoring for the real fans. I don't have a dog in the fight, but fake fans, we know who you are, and so do you. Okay? Don't do it. Shout to Matt Kinnear, huge Caps fan. We were concerned for his health, but he is well. So
good.
He's doing good. My MVP of the week, not a surprise here. Ben Reeves making his first All-Star team without playing a single minute of professional lacrosse. It's my MVP. Great job.
I mean, the efficiency is remarkable.
I mean, he could just retire now, and he's a one-time All-Star without playing. Hey, do you think that's ever happened before? How great would that be?
I mean, it's tempting. I mean, where do you go from there?
Like, I retire as champion. I made an All-Star team. Deuces.
Yeah, that is something I hadn't thought of. You know, let me go and make a prediction about Ben Reeves. If he, say, he makes his debut this weekend, if he has, like, a good game, you know, 5 goals, something crazy, but, like, you know, wow, hey, Ben Reeves looked really good out there. People are going to do – we're going to get some dumb garbage somewhere on Twitter where somebody's like, oh, where are the haters now saying Ben Reeves isn't good?
Yeah.
I guarantee you.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be Team Whatabout all over Twitter.
Right.
Team, what about?
No, nobody's saying Ben Reeves isn't good.
Yeah, that's
Ben Reeves is good. We all just saw him be very good.
Yeah.
Nobody's saying that.
We all just see him become a champion and become the all-time leading point scorer in his school's history. We're not saying Ben Reeves is bad. However, Ben Reeves better score 10 goals. He better score 10. You said 5. 5 is a good bar. I want him to score 10. Just cause. You know what? Make it 12. Marcus Holman already scored 11 this year. Let's have it be 12. Just feed him the ball every time down. See what he does. I'm not saying he can't do it, but I'm saying I want to see it. If you want to shut people up, that's how you do it.
Looking forward to it.
All right. That will bring us to the end of the second MLL podcast for we are ending week 8. And we are heading into the All-Star game in a couple weeks. And then we are taking a break for the FIL World Championships. But Chris, let everyone know where they can find you in the meantime.
You can find me on Twitter at ChrisRosie22 or Instagram at Chris Rosenthal.
And you can find me at TheKyleDevitt. I have a piece that I'm going to tell you this right now. I started writing this last Saturday, not knowing that they were going to release the All-Star team list. So you're going to think it has something to do with that. It actually doesn't. I just wrote a fun piece, and it's going to go up this week on InsideTheCross.com. Hopefully you guys will enjoy it. Thanks for checking us out. Rate us, recommend us to a friend, and we will check you later.